Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I will be your host, Ron Golden, and hang on for the ride, boys and girls. Constitution Hour is brought to you by PatriotFamilies.com. That is PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. I do not know what is going on, why my studio doesn't want to function like it is supposed to, but let's see if we can make this happen one more try. Well, I guess that's not going to work. I was trying to play an audio clip that we had. Hopefully you guys can hear me out there, as my studio audio is not functioning properly. No big surprise there. It is Blog Talk Radio after all. I was asking in the chat room if any of you had seen the movie with Clive Owen called The International. Just kind of a side note, you know, I'd seen the movie previously, and it just happened to be on again last night, and I did not make the connection, or did not know at the time in 2009, about BCCI. BCCI is a real bank that was set up by a financier named Aga Hassan Abedi from Pakistan. And interestingly enough, this Pakistani created this bank, and it was registered in Luxembourg. Now, Luxembourg, for those of you that don't follow the money game, Luxembourg has very liberal, shall we say, banking laws. They also had offices in Karachi and London, and of course we know that London is the head of the snake, so to speak, when it comes to the banking world. But in the movie, Clive Owen is an Interpol agent who's chasing after these bad guys at this bank, IBBC. Interestingly enough, of course, headquartered in Luxembourg. And these bad, nasty bankers are selling guidance systems and missiles. They're cutting in, if you will, on the international arms trade. Well, that is actually, literally, one of the things that the real bank, BCCI, was doing, among other things. The CIA, the Muslim Brotherhood, several terrorist organizations, several drug cartels, all were running money through the real bank, the BCCI. And it ran that way for a long time, and they enjoyed tremendous protection because they were everybody's banker. All the governments, all the big players around the world, they were all participants. So they enjoyed a relative shield of safety around them. Just a really pretty interesting movie when you know the real backstory of what really was going on in that bank and what it took to bring it down and just close up the whole thing. But anyway, we've got some interesting stuff going on in the world today. Nothing much new. Of course, we're looking at the new prediction of 5 million dying from Ebola. No big surprise there. We've got President Obama floundering, as usual. But, you know, we can't really blame Obama, per se. We can't blame entirely George Bush. We are responsible for allowing this to continue. And I really think, quite honestly, boys and girls, that we have let this ride get away from us. And I don't know that there's a whole lot we can do at this point to stop it, other than just ride it out. see where we land. I don't think that Obama is any better or worse than anyone else that has come down the pike and held the office of president for the last, 153 years or so. You know, everybody has their favorite. I always liked Ronald Reagan's witty one-liners and retorts, his comebacks. But aside from that, I don't think that he was terribly effective at the actual constitutional position of President of the United States. I don't think he did much to help secure our individual liberties and individual freedom. I don't think that he did much to advance the cause of the idea that was the United States of America. So, you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to try to point fingers one way or another as far as administrations are concerned. I did get a really interesting email from Miss Linda about progressive education. And, you know, it's nice to go back over familiar ground from time to time. And I know many of you that have been listening to me for any length of time, you may remember the conversations about Hegelian dialectic, dialectical thinking, the Hegelian philosophy, going all the way back to Socrates and, you know, the ant farm, as it were. And that's really what this article that Miss Linda sent is discussing, talking about the human history, the prevailing belief system, and how it changes from time to time. It goes over the founding fathers and basically the ideology that was enshrined in the founding documents, primarily the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and how those understandings, those moral absolutes, have been diminished, twisted, revised, and reviled at this point, this stage of the game. It's just a very, very good article. So, you know, if you get a chance to review it, I'm going to put a link in the chat room to that particular article. And if you get the chance to look at it, I think it's a worthwhile read. And there's really a good video in there as well of a young lady over in England, Britain, whichever you prefer, giving a rundown on the suicidal undertaking that is their politically correct multiculturalism. And still to this day, in a lot of places around the world, people will identify themselves as Londoners, British, American, and so forth. But we're also seeing a real watering down of that culture and that sense of pride in one's homeland, if you will. And that's part of the progressive education, Hegelian philosophy, the dialectic, the dumbing down of the populace. It's kind of sad. It's really sad to watch. And you all know that I am the last person who would be touting nationalism, and I certainly don't tout nationalism. It is sad to watch, Miss Linda. It's very sad. Part of me is happy or content to see that we're moving beyond the silly concepts of nationalism, but at the same time, we're having difficulty identifying ourselves our society here in the United States, and we're all just kind of this multicultural hodgepodge of lemmings for the most part. People trying to find their identity. And I think we're in a very dangerous time right now. It's a transitional period, and I think we're seeing a lot of that. We talked about this last week. Hey, Cal, how you doing? Miss Linda, Ron, Miss Yola. I think I've got Mr. Bill Strong just listening in on the phone, calling in. We're in a very interesting and very dangerous time. If you understand at least some of the thought processes that went into creating the where we are now, irrespective of, you know, various theories and concepts, but if we just take at face value the historical documents that have been written, and we look back to World War I and then World War II, you know, it was quite interesting. When we look at World War I and noting who was instrumental in the Bolshevik uprising in Russia, and knowing that that was orchestrated largely in Germany. Okay, Nick, I will take a look at Miss Yola's Skype message. It was truly the an uprising in Russia that created the socialist movement, if you will, the Bolsheviks, and you know, Marx and his decrying of the bourgeois. We had this greater or wider war. You know, the war was largely contained in World War I to Europe, and I don't think it would have spread much further. But they were actually, I think, just about fought to a draw between Germany and the UK until the US got involved. And then, of course, we moved into World War II, and we kind of played standoff during World War II as well. We didn't get too involved at first initially, but then the U.S. did get involved. And since the end of World War II, we have had one world government. Of course, we've only got one world, right? But there's been one superpower that has been the head of the order, the world order, so to speak. And that one government, that one superpower is us, the United States. In a move to keep Europe from fighting and creating another conflict in greater Europe, the United States, as victor, gave a portion of Europe to the Soviets, and the remainder of Europe, we, the United States, created military bases, and we act as the military for Europe. We are Europe's military. Now, they could not get the League of Nations to function after World War I, so we reconstituted the League of Nations under the banner of the United Nations at the end of World War II. And I know I'm just reiterating a lot of history that you guys probably already know, but that is, you know, really what largely has precipitated and driven a lot of our foreign policy from 1948 forward. You know, we had the creation through the Red Line Agreement, we talked about that, of the boundaries within the Middle East, the greater Middle East. And in 1948, we had the creation of the nation state of Israel through the UN Security Council, voted on favorably by the US and Russia. And then immediately, the United States embarked on a Cold War, if you will. Sometimes it was a little hotter than one would envision for a Cold War. We recognized that the Soviets were the single threat that could dethrone the U.S. from world hegemony, from the king of the mountain, top of the heap, head of the empire. You know, that was the death of the English Empire. The British Empire had long since been done, and the U.S. had just found its legs and its muscle at the end of World War II. We knew, without doubt, we ran the world. And whatever the United States did, the rest of the world would follow. And we enjoyed that position primarily because of monetary expansion. And I find it kind of ironic. That's true. That's true. But some of it is created, Cal. You know, sometimes we can't leave well enough alone, so we have to create a boogeyman. But I find it interesting that going into World War II, we were not in a position to be a creditor nation to anyone. Until after, of course, we confiscated the private property of all of our citizens. What we're seeing today, of course, in 1971, 72, we had the negotiation of the petrodollar arrangement. And since then, we've enjoyed a pretty long run of free money, loose monetary policy, and just pigging out at the trough, so to speak. And I think what we're witnessing right now is the falling away, falling apart of that system that has been created. And we know it. Leaders in Washington know it. The bankers, they know it. And we want to be at the head of that change, or the powers that be, they want to be at the forefront of that change. And I don't think it's going to work out the way they'd planned. And I think that we've been playing checkers while some others have been playing chess. And those others would be China. I think China is the steering force behind what you're seeing right now, but they're going to play silent partner. They're very shrewd. And if you go back over the last 10 years and look at how China has positioned themselves, where they have put our money, or that is the credit that they've loaned us through trade and credit default swaps, they've put that into hard commodities, tangible goods. You know, the only reason that we have a petrodollar is because saying that we just have an imaginary underpinning for our paper dollar just won't work because people won't fall for it. Well, they probably would today, but it's pretty much monopoly money. So they had to have something underlying it, underpinning it, to give the perception of stability. You know, I watch the markets pretty close, and I find it absolutely stunning. Currently, the dollar index is extremely high, 84.78. It's been much, much lower in the past, but that's not the astonishing thing to me. You know, when I've seen the dollar index down around 70, okay, and you look at the other currencies and how they're trading against the dollar, it's the same. It's still 13 pesos to the dollar. It's still a more or less one-to-one ratio between Canada and the U.S., between the Australian dollar and the U.S. dollar. You know, the British pound is still trading. You know, the U.S. dollar in England is still worth only about 67 cents, 63 cents. You go to the Eurozone, the dollar's only worth about 77 cents. So we have this large increase in the dollar index, meaning that's it's signaling a stronger dollar. But everybody else's currency is right there with us. It's kind of like the old saying that a rising tide floats all boats. But there is nothing fundamentally backing this increased strength, this supposed increased strength. The European zone, their economy has not gotten any better. It's not better. People aren't rioting in the streets, or if they are, you're not seeing it on the nightly news. But it was just a few weeks ago that France dissolved the government, and the president or prime minister or whatever the hell he is over in France was busy appointing new governments, and it was all over monetary issues. And we look at our economy, and, you know, of course, while everyone says, oh, we're in recovery, they've been singing this song for a while, and you cannot print and buy your own debt to the tune of $85 billion a month and whistle past the graveyard and tell everybody the sun's shining and the economy's booming. It doesn't work that way. That's like writing bad checks and saying, man, am I rich. You know, it's just sooner or later it's going to catch up with you. And I heard a gentleman over the weekend talking about the economy, and he gave the best description I've heard yet. What he said was that we are right now in the eye of the financial hurricane that came ashore 2008, and we're just about to hit the back side of that eye wall. And I know enough of you have watched television, the Weather Channel, watched Hurricane Katrina. Everybody knows at this point that the most damage, the strongest winds, the most horrific part of the hurricane is always the backside of the eye wall. And that's exactly what we're getting ready to experience in our economy here. It will be much worse than 2008. And we're already crippled and damaged by the first wave coming ashore. And now we're in the eye of the storm, and everything's kind of calmed. Everybody's, man, the market's up. Everything's looking good. But, you know, the stock market is not our economy. If you've listened to my program for any length of time, you know that that is a false indicator. More so today than perhaps at any other time since 1929. So I think we've got a lot of things that we need to be watching for. We need to be paying attention to what's going on around us. We need not run out waving our arms and getting all crazy. When everyone else starts to go crazy around you, that's when you need to be able to keep your head and keep focused. And that's what we need to do. I really, really think that we're seeing some falling away. I think the European Union is going to break apart. I think we're seeing the end of the American Empire, that era in time. And if you really look at what that encompasses, that's why I was talking about Europe and the fact that we have military bases and military engaged in, actively engaged in being a military and occupying force, albeit perhaps an occupying force for good, nonetheless, in Europe, throughout Europe. They don't have an army when compared to the United States. Yes, we've got NATO, and that's another one of those bones of contention. By trying to push the EU further into the Eurasian continent, into places like the Ukraine, that's a bridge too far for some of the folks on the other side. And with the way that the Chinese, the Russians, the BRICS nations have positioned themselves. They've created a banking system. They have in place a clearinghouse. A clearinghouse is just a way of clearing payments, an exchange of capital from one form to another, bankers. They've created their own system, and it completely circumvents the U.S. dollar. And that's why you see Europe hesitant. They'll come out and talk real tough, but when it comes to actually laying the smack down with these sanctions, they've been a little hesitant. And Austria, interestingly enough, has been at the forefront of that hesitancy. Again, we see Scotland trying to break away from England. My God, how long has that been going on? They may actually accomplish it. So this is like a whole restructuring, and we may see some falling back to the old school European boundaries and ideologies. And I think that a lot of these European countries, for all their politically correct rhetoric, I think that intelligence, logic, and reason is beginning to seep through their liberalism, and they're starting to realize that this multiculturalism crap that they've been preaching isn't all it's cracked up to be. And I think they are becoming quite afraid. And it looks like we have Miss Linda on the line. Miss Linda, how are you?
Fine. Roasting. We're getting a huge heat wave here. Thanks for asking. And how about
there? You poor thing. You know, it was about 72 degrees today and no humidity, a little bit of cloud cover, so it wasn't too sunny. It was just perfect.
When I came back from Delaney, I think I brought Indiana's weather with me, except when we were at the camp, it was perfect. It was like almost like Oceanside. And then, of course, when I left, I brought all the bad stuff with me. So we're suffering because our humidity is really high, 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 much higher. Oops.
Well, that's good. You deserve it out there. I hope they, sweating with the oldies. You got Feinstein and, you know, holy cow, you got a mess out there of idiots. Pelosi, you know.
Oh, my God.
I love
Maxine
that.
Waters and a few thousand others.
Maxine Waters at the, caliphate convention there with her Muslim buddies. They would cut
God.
Her throat as soon. Look at her. These people are foolish. They're absolutely foolish, you know.
You know, here's what I'm saying. You were talking first about the article that I sent you, and I did send it to Terry Rowland and Mikey B. So basically, we've got, you're right, we've got so much, I mean, the monetary system, like I was saying in the chat room, they send us every Monday, they send us what they're going to put on sale on, I guess, Wednesday through whatever, the whole week. And so I put sale in quotation, you know, those air quotes, because the inflation is coming home to roost, believe me. I look at the prices of food in the markets. I mean, would they call this a sale? Oh, my God. And then I'm actually having a good time with my – am I still there?
You're still
on. I keep getting beeps on my phone. Probably voicemails and stuff. Anyway, I've been living off veggies on my garden since it was July because I planted in April, and they started coming up mid-June. I mean, growing.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that publicly on air, Linda. You know, those have not been FDA inspected. And the Stasi might come and shut you down. If you're eating non-USDA inspected food, do you realize how risky that is? I mean, you're taking your life in your own hands.
And the other thing is, they're going to love this one because I have also a nice basil plant, which I like to cook with fresh basil, you know, for whatever I'm making. And it was so well producing that I was giving it around to the neighbors, and I had so much zucchini out here. My neighbors were like just going, oh, my God, this is great. I mean, I couldn't eat it quick enough. Cucumber, same thing. I just made some fresh carrots. I even have broccoli coming up because that's kind of a late bloomer anyway. So it's just been,
sure.
It's been amazing. And the green beans, they're kind of dying out now, but you know, I'm sure that they love the fact that I'm feeding the neighbors with my non, you know.
Yeah, that's the only thing I hate. The only thing I hate about gardening is I love sweet peas, and Cal was talking about sweet peas. And you got to plant like 5 acres of sweet peas to get a 10-cup full. Not truly, but I mean that's a lot of work for sweet peas. But I love them, and there is nothing better than fresh sweet peas out of the garden. Mm. Fresh tomatoes,
had them,
onions.
So, darn it! Oh, the tomatoes. Yeah, we did get a few tomatoes, not in my garden, but other people were growing them, and so it was wonderful. And I have at least two or three boxes filled with food storage, you know, in case, you know, the meltdown really gets crazy. So with these prices, I'm going to start rotating it and live off that for a while. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You can can a lot of that stuff real easily.
True.
You know, and I mean, you can even there are recipes online if you don't have canning equipment. You can slice up your cucumbers and throw them in a Tupperware dish with some vinegar and some pickling salt, and just throw a lid on it and put it in the refrigerator for a week, and you'll have awesome homemade pickles. My grandmother canned everything. I grew up on a farm, and we had food in the basement from the 60s, for God's sakes.
Oh, my Lord. Well, you know, my friend in Michigan, he's in Clinton Township, and they have that really nice boat. And back in 2010, I went from D.C. up there and played for about 10 days. And he has a full basement, which is amazing. You know, they always do. And he's got canning equipment. He does his own brining of different types of jalapenos and different peppers and things. He has one of those deli slicers on his kitchen table where he goes to the Italian restaurant or the market, and he gets the fantastic pepperoni, and he made homemade pizza. I'm not kidding. I am spoiled for life. Absolutely spoiled for life. There's no question.
I definitely have one of the meat slicers and some of the other stuff. Don't forget, you know, if you're going to do home canning, you're going to need a pressure cooker. Uh-oh. we just got Homeland Security's ears perked up. The NSA just said, somebody said pressure cooker. You know, there's satellites linking up right now.
They're going to roll up on both of us in about 2 minutes.
Remember, you buy those online and get a couple of backpacks when you buy your pressure cooker. Everything will be just fine.
At the sporting goods store, yes. Propane tanks come there, too. Yes, absolutely. My God. Anyway, so we were going back to the one that I sent, and that was Bradley Dean, Sons of Liberty, and he was on my show one time, and it was really fun because he's pretty cool. But I've invited him back. Haven't heard much. I know he's busy. But he gets a lot of great articles on his site, and that's why that one caught my eye. And when you talk about the multiculturalism, and I think that woman from England was talking about Australia, where they have put the foot down on this stuff, and they tell them, if you don't like our culture, you can just go back from where you came. And they've done it twice. So, you know, people don't understand. And we've got this open border stuff. We've got a Schmendrick in the White House pushing it. We've got a DOJ that should be in jail. I mean, it's a mess. And I tried to explain to Rod Luke a couple days ago, because he keeps sending me these articles about ISIS and everything else and the Constitution and this, that, and the other. And I go, look, wrap your head around this. We do not live in the America that was written about and fought for in the Revolutionary War. We don't. It's gone. You know, you've got to see.
It died in 1861, and they put the death nail in it in 1867. This is something that I've been trying to get people to understand and recognize for such a long time. And, you know, it's almost like talking ill of Jewish people. You can't do that without being an anti-Semite and a racist and a scumbag. You know, it's like, really, I mean, just get over yourself already. I'm not a black-hating racist. It has nothing to do with slavery. I don't want to go back to the days of slavery. But the reality is the reality, and that's the thing that I think most Americans have not grasped a hold of yet.
And
the America
also,
that you believe in is a fairy tale.
Well, yeah, we've been living in Plato's cave since, you know, probably way before I was born. But when you look at also in those videos talking about not just the multiculturalism and the Hegelian dialectic, but the political correctness, I mean, it's destroying our nation, has been for a long time. And I knew instinctively that that was bad even before I got involved with all this stuff.
Right.
You feel it. You just feel it in your bones. And there was I've talked about a little bit about this before, when Dinesh D'Souza put out the movie he did this past July, and it was America, Imagine a World Without Her. Well, there's a lot of inconsistencies there with any of the people who question Lincoln's dynasty, Abraham Lincoln's dynasty at the time.
Oh, yeah.
But in that movie, but what he did say on the interview, and I think it was, can't remember which radio host had him on, but what he was trying to explain to people was, it's not about the era. It's not about agri-farming. It's not about that particular era or slavery or anything else. It's the principles. They're time-honored. They're biblically.
It's the idea, the concept.
Yes.
That
yes.
is what created and gave rise to the United States of America.
Right.
That's
exactly.
What I've been trying to tell people. It's America, the United States of America is not a place that you can find on a map. It is a
right.
concept that arose from the minds of very wise men
mm-hmm.
who lived during the age of what we call the Enlightenment age.
Yep.
And they
and
recognized some very hard and fast truths.
Yes. How do you think they learned how to read at the age of five? They were taught from the Bible. That's probably the only book they had at the time when they were little. These people were not atheists. They were. They understood that there is a creator, that there is a God, and someday we're going to be held accountable. There were absolutes. That's how it was formed. That's how
if you go back and look at the major universities, they were seminaries.
Yes.
They were religious
institutions
at their outset. You know, when the founders, people like Thomas Jefferson and others, when they reached the age of 14 or 15 or sometimes 16, their next level of schooling was to go off to seminary.
Yes.
That's where they got their high-level education.
Right.
Nothing like what we have today, which is just a bunch of feel-good bullcrap. Unfortunately... It goes to that, you know, Miss Terry has talked about it. There is no right or wrong. There's only how you feel. And
yes.
we don't want to hurt anyone's little self-esteem bubble and burst their bubble. And it irritates the crap out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my store manager and I were talking today. And our company is being taken over by a much larger company.
Right.
And within the framework of this company, I understand and he understands that there really is no place for guys like he and I.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that we are problem solvers. We're thinkers. We think on our feet. We're able to resolve mm-hmm. issues and solve problems before they become a problem. And that's really
right.
not what the model is. The model is get your ass in the box and push the buttons. That's what you're here for. You push buttons, and you push
the
enough buttons
the
at the end of the day, and we give you a carrot. And that's not
uh-huh.
what we do. You're absolutely correct, Cal. I am not a follower. We are independent thinkers, and we are critical thinkers, and we resolve problems. When an issue comes up, we usually see it before it occurs, and we cut it off at the pass. That's not what these companies want. They want yes men. They want people to stand there at the counter, smile, and say, yes, ma'am, that's what you want. That's exactly what you want, and it's only $200. Can I get you five of those today? You know, and just be an order taker. That's all they need.
Right.
They don't need problem solvers and thinkers, because those guys create trouble for them.
Oh, my gosh. You know, that brings a couple stories to mind. In this past Sunday, our pastor was talking about in the Bible when in those days when people were, I believe Old Testament, when people were sentenced to jail, it wasn't just jail. He said they were tortured. He says they actually had professional torturers. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, God, there's 535 of them in D.C. They're professional torturers. That's what they do. They torture me.
Well, those folks up there are professional idiots. They are just the kind of people that these companies are looking for. They're yes men. You know, and that's part of the reason I brought up the movie, The International, with Clive Owen. You know, throughout the whole movie, here's this guy, Clive Owen, and he wants to bring down these no-good scumbags that are running this bank. My God, they're selling weapons to terrorists, missile systems, and the one guy, very interesting, in the movie, Turkey, the owner of the bank flies to Istanbul to meet with the guy who is purchasing these rocket systems and selling them off to the Muslims. And his concern is that he has inside information that this same guy in Turkey sold to the Israelis the countermeasures to counter these rockets, essentially making them useless. And he's worried that the word will get out and his customers won't want to buy these missiles. And the guy... With that, are you still with me?
Yeah, I think I lost for a second. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I think it was my internet connection kind of wigged out on us. So, yeah, he's like, oh, don't worry. It's just good business. I would never tell anyone. The secret's safe. So he wants to make sure these guys are, you know, buying these missile systems. This is what Sybil Edmonds, okay?
Yes.
You've heard me talk about Miss Sybil Edmonds and the classified lady and, you know, justacecitizen.org. She worked at the FBI transcribing intercepted telephone conversations that they had intercepted prior to 9/11, during 9/11, and after 9/11. And what she uncovered was that we had high-level officials in the Pentagon, the State Department, and sitting U.S. senators and congressmen that were involved through this BCCI, through Pakistan, through Turkey. Okay, they were involved in funding terrorist organizations, illegal weapons trade, drug trafficking, bribery, selling, you know, U.S. secrets. I mean, there was nothing sacrosanct. And, of course, who does she have to go to? Well, it ends up, she goes all the way up the food chain in the FBI, and she ends up testifying before Congress. And Congress said, you know what? You need to shut your mouth. You need to shut up. We're going to put you under a congressional gag order. And then she goes to a federal judge, and she testifies in federal court, and the federal judge says, oh, no, we're putting you under a federal gag order. So now, you know, the highest courts, aside from the Supreme Court, at the federal level, have told her, shut the hell up, and if you say anything, we're going to throw your ass in prison and lose the key.
Yep, that's what they do, or they off you. I mean...
Now, we've also got, you know, from Peter Dale Scott, The Road to 9/11, War, Empire, and Oil, where he talks about the fact that we have companies in the United States that are Middle Eastern-owned companies prior to 9/11 that are selling, of all things, software programs to the Defense Department, to the White House.
Good. God.
So our infrastructure, our government, and our Pentagon is buying software from basically the Muslim Brotherhood, for lack of a better definition.
Yep. Doesn't surprise me.
And so we're integrating this software into our systems. Do you think that they don't have access?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even a basement hack can get in, try to do bad things to people's computers.
Now, there is no way that the officials in control of these things, they didn't know. They had no idea. They know who these people are. They know where this stuff is coming from.
It is corrupt.
And
it is extremely.
And yet people, wag the finger and say, oh, these guys are crazy. Oh, it's a 9/11 truther. Oh, I got some 9/11 truth for you. An inside job? It was an inside-outside job. Are you kidding me? Hell, everybody was on the bandwagon.
I believe it. It was.
You know how not
well, yeah.
anybody pointing fingers is get everybody with a little bit of egg on their face, and nobody
sure.
wants to say boo because they're afraid they'll be the ones getting run over by the damn bus.
Oh, yeah. The bus is there.
There's
a steamroller.
There is a lot of culpability to go around in 9/11, for 9/11. Just plain and simple. It doesn't take some grand conspiracy. But there were some folks that knew damn good and well what was going on. You've got people that were coming into the U.S. On a visa and a passport that was absolutely, demonstrably approved by CIA through a front organization, and they were on the watch list. They were on the do not pass, go, don't allow into the U.S. list. And one of them ends up enlisting in the military and is a sergeant in the Special Forces out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Are you freaking kidding me?
Jeez. Unbelievable. I know. So he was arrested twice,
once in California.
Oh, my God. So where do you see what we have, whatever the system is we have? Where is it? How is this going to end? I mean, not well, I'm sure, but where do you see it going?
I honestly have no idea. I think that they're playing with fire. Quite honestly.
Oh my God! Yeah.
I think they're absolutely playing with fire, and I was going back just doing a little quick research before I got on, and trying to put together a timeline, and I'm trying to recall the first time I heard about ISIS or ISIL.
Okay.
Now, according to what's on Wikipedia, probably the first time we would have heard about ISIL or ISIS would have been somewhere in late 2012. Because before that, they were, we've all heard this one, Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Yes.
Now, somehow, Al-Qaeda in Iraq becomes ISIL, who is fighting to dethrone Assad.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to me that it was August 12, 2012, when Obama said that Syria had crossed a red line.
Yes.
And it was shortly after that that this new threat arrived on the scene, ISIL.
The boogeyman. Yeah, the new
right,
boogeyman.
Or ISIS. So, gee, Assad, shame on you. You've crossed a red line. Well, gosh, golly gee, Congress won't give me permission to go into Syria, as if that stopped us. It damn sure didn't stop us in Libya. I don't know why it stopped us in Syria, right?
Yep.
So then suddenly, right on cue, comes the boogeyman. And now that's all anybody talks about, ISIS, ISIS, ISIS. And a good friend of mine, and I tried to get the clip to download so I could play it, but I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But he just found it a bit ironic. And what the clip was a conversation on C-SPAN from 1990. And the gentlemen were discussing the Israeli Mossad. And he says, well, we wanted to know, what do you call it? What, in circles, when the CIA calls, they want to call the Mossad, what do they call them? And he said, you know, with, you can't just pick up the phone and call and ask because, you know, they're just going to laugh at you. And so they went round and round. Finally, he got in touch with the, you know, the deputy prime minister of Israel, and he asked him, and he said, well, it is the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, ISIS.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And it's tied to the British, of course, MI6. And I just thought, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
From way back in 1990, who knows? You know, we're never going to know the truth of the whole thing. But, you know, going back, and we kind of got chased around the bushes a little bit. Going back to that movie, The International, Clive Owen, you know, he's the good guy, and he wants to bring these guys to justice. Mm-hmm. And one of the heads of the bank is a former KGB officer, interestingly enough. And so he says, oh, you know, he says, you want justice? He said, it doesn't exist, not in this world. He said, who are you going to go after? And he says, I want to close down the bank. He said, you can't. They're protected. Everyone's involved. Your government, my government, Israel's government, you know, everybody. All the multinational corporations, they're all involved. Well, he goes after them, and he has a backdoor plan, and he enacts his backdoor plan, and he follows the head, the actual lead guy of the bank to Istanbul, Turkey. And he chases him down, and they end up in this scene where they're running along the rooftops. And he's got him cornered, and he's got his gun drawn. And the banker looks right at him, and he goes, you can't kill me. And he says, what good would it do you to kill me? He said, you can shoot me. There'll be 100 bankers lined up to take my place.
Yeah, he's probably correct.
And he's absolutely correct. He's absolutely right. This is one thing, you know, money makes the world go round. And we all know it's the money, it's the money, it's the monetary system, it's the monetary system, it's the damn monetary system. And that's what this whole conflict is about right now that we're seeing with the Ukraine, with Russia, China quietly, you know, they've moved 25,000 troops to the Russian border, whatever. We're playing war games now over in the Ukraine.
When you
this
you
is
know,
nothing
I mean,
more.
We could.
This is
yeah.
Yeah, this is nothing more than a tug of war, and the rope is made of paper dollars on one side, and the yuan, paper yuan, on the other side. And the Russians are pulling on the yuan, and we're pulling on the dollar. It's all who gets to be the head banker in charge to run the system. The global plantation, if you will.
Exactly. And well, this goes back, I mean, we can go back to, the Sadducees and Pharisees and Christ time, and you can go way back beyond that. But as far as what Christ was saying, and he was absolutely correct enough, he was very upset with the bad guys because he overthrew the tables. And in many of his speeches or his sermons was, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and mammon. You can't. And you know who these people are serving. I mean, it's
absolutely
pretty clear.
Look, you go back into the ancient writings, and I've talked about this before. One of the Holy Grail was alchemy.
Yes.
You know, a lot of folks
messing with the money. Yeah.
They wanted to create gold out of nothing. They've succeeded. They have absolutely flippin' succeeded.
It's a Federal Reserve note.
You have digital gold. I mean, you've got digital gold. It's nothing more than ones and zeros entered into a computer program, and it's as good as gold.
Right.
It's paper gold. You know, they turned ink and paper into gold. Why not? That's been the dream of empire and emperors and dictators for centuries, is to be, sure. You know, Midas, the Midas touch, the spinning wheel, the spin gold
yeah,
threads
exactly.
out of, you know, silk or whatever.
Oh,
it's
God.
Making gold without any work. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to go find it, mine it, refine it, you know, and stamp it. No, you just conjure
oh, yeah.
it up.
You
as
go down
Edward
to Staples
Griffin
and get
says,
get your easy
yeah.
button.
Yeah, as G. Edward Griffin said, it's the Mandrake method.
Oh yeah, and they've done a good job.
Mandrake the magician, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
yeah,
worked for a hell of a long time.
Well,
it's failing.
Well, yeah, that of course it is. And I think that, you know, other than the fact that we have a completely dumbed down populace who stuck up some of the huge lies that come down the pike from the UN like it was gospel, which would be global warming and climate change and all the rest of it. Believe me, I fight this on a daily basis in my own community, and I'll expound on that on my show. But it's they have created all of this stuff out of whole cloth, and they have pushed it, and they've taken a long time to do it because evil is patient. It doesn't care how long it takes to win. That's what they're doing. They will push this until it takes hold. And in California, it is completely worse. When you said the other day, circling the drain, oh, my God, California, somebody's got their finger on the flush button, believe me, and I just hope I can get out of here before it's pushed. It's a mess.
Well, and we have with us tonight a candidate for public office, I believe, out of Florida, Mr. Robert Kaplan. Is that you, sir?
Yay.
Ron, can you hear me? Because you're breaking up.
I've got him.
I can hear you loud and clear, sir.
I can hardly hear you guys.
It could be your phone because I can hear Ron perfectly.
You guys are breaking
yeah,
up. I just
right.
want to...
Well, I think we might have lost him.
I think it was
give me a call back, Ron, at 941-447.
Well, I can hear you. No, we can hear you perfect, Robert. We can hear you perfect. What do you want to say?
It's you're right. You told me about the paper money back when you visited me when we were having micro beers.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you were right on the money. You were right on the money then.
Yep.
Because no one doesn't want to hear about it anymore.
No, you know, that's the thing. People do not want to hear the truth.
No, they don't.
Anything
no.
but the truth.
They don't. They really don't, Ron. It really, you know what it's like? It's like being in a dental chair, having your tooth pulled without Novocaine. Really. That's the analogy of it all. I don't have
any for me, it's worse than that. I mean, once you know, for me, it is so damn difficult on a daily basis to become motivated enough to put one foot in front of the other, to put my sock on in the morning.
But you know what I said to everybody? I was so mad yesterday, guys. This is the trifecta. This is the trifecta. The trifecta is this. George Soros, Marco Rubio, and my opponent, Dr. Gonzalez, M.D. Julio. The three O's. Okay? It's the trifecta. And this is what I told them. They could go find a favorite Cuban cigar, and they could smoke it and aspirate on it. Period. That's what I said to them yesterday. So right now, I'm traveling to Sarasota trying to meet my wife, and I'm getting, you know, birds, and people are trying to hit me on the highway. So, you know, that's why I'm on the phone with you guys, because I didn't need protection until you guys get off the air.
Okay,
you talk about traveling to Sarasota here in a couple of weeks. I will be traveling to the Mile High City. So maybe I can find some brownies out there that'll mellow my mood a little bit.
Oh, man, please, you know, mail me some. You know, this is what's so upsetting.
This whole mess would be a lot easier to take if we were all just stoned.
Yeah, out of our minds. But Ron, this is a clincher. If you have your EBT card now, you can buy medical marijuana with your EBT card.
Of course. Why not? Of course.
Absolutely. Anything, you know, bread and frickin' circus, man. And I only say that in jest, ladies and gentlemen. I am going to Denver. I do not have any plans whatsoever to partake in any of the cannabis variables to be found in the hedonistic city of the New World Airport.
Jesus.
Exactly. I've seen pictures.
I've had 6 attacks on my life already. 6 of them on Facebook.
Jeez.
I had to call the police Sunday to come over and check my Facebook. He says, "Sir, those weren't direct attacks. They were just threats. Don't worry about it." I said, "Well,
you got to start wearing the yarmulke, and then you can get the ADL to come in and help you out."
Absolutely.
Oh, there it gets me too.
Oh, no.
My own religion is against me, believe me.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, they are, because I called it. I said my last will and testament at 5 o'clock in the morning that one day, that same day, Joe Rivers died. And, you know, my opponent has frozen my campaign fundraiser. He's hacked that. And he's probably going to use my fundraiser for himself. And he's just going to go to hell, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, at least I told the truth. I backed you guys up. You gave me the research and knowledge to fight back, and I did what I had to do for you guys. So, you know, the moral of the story is, all I got to do, if he doesn't debate me, Mr. Ron, the second time around, they have my phone number. They have 2 of my phone numbers. If they don't debate me the second time around by November 4th, you'll be seeing me in Tallahassee, sir.
Well, you know, I just remember back to when I was working with a lot of guys around here locally when a certain libertarian Republican named Ron Paul was running for office.
Yep.
And all the shenanigans that went on at the local level. You know, these people, they don't want anything other than the good old boy network. They want business as usual.
You know,
nothing more.
And you're both right because this past week, which I said I will expand a little bit more on my show. Just my own city council, just one little city. I mean, these people are acting. They're almost like Khrushchev with the shoe on the desk. I mean, this is how bad it was at the city council meeting. I'm not
saying
they were acting like. And, you know, so I was thinking, if you need a reason to put your pants on one leg at a time and get up and go do something, just go hang out with your local city council, do a speech, and then have somebody come up to you 2 days later and say, "I didn't understand a word you said." I mean, it was that right on the air. I got to tell you this story on my show. It's you're going to love it. I mean, it gets you motivated. It's like, oh, well, at least this person's listening. But it's better than that.
Well, you know, it was so funny and sad at the same time. And I know I've told the story before, but I think back to my first meeting, my first committee hearing at the state capitol here in Georgia as a registered lobbyist.
Right.
And I went in, and the meeting was about cockfighting. And, you know, I really thought, wow, just what a waste. You know, I don't have time for this. I want something more substantial,
right.
Something of substance that you know, I can take a position on and argue my position. And wouldn't you know, as I got in the room and it was filled to capacity, who knew? I had no clue that cockfighting was such a heated topic in the state of Georgia. And I didn't know, you know, what side am I on? Am I on a side? Is ridiculous. And as I sat through the meeting and listened, and I signed up to testify, even though I had no idea what the hell I would possibly testify about. But as I sat through the meeting and listened to the two sides banter back and forth, and realized as I was sitting there that the entire thing, this legislation that was being proposed, truly came down to a couple of disgruntled neighbors. One disgruntled neighbor who had actually bought some property next to a guy who'd lived on his property for 35, 40 years. They don't like the fact that the guy had gamecocks, roosters. And so he was doing anything and everything he could to get this guy arrested and his roosters removed from his property.
Right.
All of this precipitated this congressman presenting a or a state rep presenting a damn bill that to become legislation, and they rolled that or parlayed that into an anti-cockfighting bill that would make it a felony, ladies and gentlemen, to be present on the property wherein a cockfight was being conducted. And I said, can you imagine being the poor UPS driver delivering a package as the place is raided, right? As the place is being raided, but according to their proposed legislation, there would be no, if you were there, you were guilty. It's just that simple. And all these idiots, and I watched these people one after another testify about all the perils of cockfighting. And, of course, we went through the gambit of, you know, the poor chickens. I'm like, yeah, shit, we slaughter, you know, millions of them a day because they taste good,
yeah.
But don't worry about that. And then of course, it was the poor children. They always play to the poor, poor children
how
negatively impacted they're going to be. And then finally, there's a lot of gambling and money that changes hands at these things, and no one's paying taxes on that money. Those are profits, and the state is losing out. And I'm like, oh, for God's sakes. Well, trust me, I was the last person to testify at that committee hearing,
and
I had plenty to say by the time I got to the table. I was furious, absolutely furious, and just the ridiculousness of the whole damn thing.
God. Oh my God!
And you
that's
know,
hysterical.
I was trembling. I was so angry when I got to the table, and I thought, you know, who in the hell? And that's why I told him. I said, "Who the hell do you people think you are? I don't own a rooster or a chicken, but if I did, it's none of your damned business what I do with that chicken rooster. Period.
I know."
Now, I understand that cockfighting is not really good for the roosters. That's really not my problem, and it's not your decision.
It's the
roosters' are you going to send an inspector out to make sure that I'm humanely killing my roosters and chickens in a manner that purports to the state guidelines? It's my frickin' property, and
oh
I can
God.
Do with that property what I wish.
Well, it's the state lines for killing cocks.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we had one state
sorry,
rep there. It's
I
okay. I got you, Robert. It's okay. I know, you know, if it's on your mind, it's, well, never mind. I won't go there. But, you know, we had one state rep that, you know, he read the preamble to our Constitution here in Georgia. And he then looked at the rep that was proposing the bill, and he said, sir, you and I were elected to public office to serve our constituents, and our guideline is this preamble to our Constitution that I just read to you, and we are here to safeguard the property and the liberties of our constituents. So my question to you is, what part of your bill accomplishes that goal, and how does it go about accomplishing it? Well, you could have heard a freaking pin drop in the room because it didn't do any of those things.
Wow.
What it did was seek to diminish one gentleman or one group of people's right to property,
right?
Because someone else didn't like it.
Well, yeah,
wow.
I mean.
Yeah, well, it is, you know.
You're dealing with a food source. You're not dealing with, like, human babies or something. No one's,
my question to the committee was, where do you get your grant of authority to tell me how I can utilize my own personal property? Who gave you that authority? Where is that grant of authority in our Constitution? When were you granted that authority? Oh, well.
That's why the government's taking over the farmland, Ron.
Let me tell you, there were a couple 21. Of them that didn't like it. And there was Republican, conservative. She slapped her microphone, rolled her eyes, and huffed. And I said, you can roll your eyes at me all you want, but it doesn't change the reality. And she says, well, we're sent here to resolve problems, and this issue is a problem. And so we have to figure out how to resolve it. She says, and sometimes, you know, we have to compromise. And I looked at her and I said, well, I'm sorry, but you don't have the authority to compromise my right to property. No one's granted you that authority.
It's nowhere in the Constitution, Ron.
What did she say then?
Oh, she turned her microphone off. She was just beside herself.
Did she have a cow? She should have had a cow.
She said, well, we have to compromise. And I said, not with my rights, you don't. You don't have that authority.
You're funny,
Ron. Who do you think you are? You must think you're God or something to sit up here and tell me that you're going to compromise my rights. I notice you're not compromising your own.
No.
You know what? This is the problem with those people who are actually in these chairs, Ron, that they are so misguided in their thought process of what they think they've been elected to do that it's beyond our comprehension, because these people are completely, I think they're just watered down, you know, morons.
Well, they see themselves as problem solvers, not problem creators. I'm sorry, but when you look at the vast body of law that has been written since 1791, was the natural law and the common law so thoroughly deficient and thoroughly inept that it would precipitate writing my God, they have buildings blocks long in Washington, D.C. just to house all this toilet paper.
Garbage. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It's pure
That's all it is, toilet paper. That's all it is.
And people get all upset with me when I point out the fact that, you know, look, you don't need this law or that law. There are already laws on the books that cover this kind of thing.
There's tort law, and it's always been the same.
Yes.
I have a question for you. How many amended total amendments since Obama's been in office? How many do you think has been amended towards the Constitution?
We don't have a Constitution.
You don't have a Constitution.
When was the last one that was ratified? Was probably in the 90s or something. So there's no new one.
Well, but you don't need them because you don't have a constitution. You haven't had one
to begin with.
For a long time.
If I have to debate this guy again, I said you don't know the rule of law because there's no constitution to know the rule of law anymore. Would I be correct in saying that, sir?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
The last one was the 27th Amendment, ratified May 7th, 1992.
I was pretty close. Yep. Okay.
Yes, you were, Linda. Thank you, Linda.
No, he's doing this executive fiat nonsense, and he's got a pen and a phone, and you know where I'd like to see those put. But, you know, and the Congress is irrelevant because we don't have a normal society. I believe it was Mike DeBee's show the other day when the gentlemen were talking and they said, you don't live in the America you think you do. This is a tyrannical, despotic piece of garbage, and they're just, you know, they're steamrolling over you.
That was the one angry Jew. And
he's right.
Well, then you'd be the second angry Jew. It's absolutely the truth. And
well,
you know, you've not had, I beg your pardon. You prove to me, anyone out there listening, bring me factual proof that you have lived under a constitutional government at any point in time in your existence. You have not.
There has not
been a constitutional government since 1861, and it's demonstrably provable. I can prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt.
And you know what's the worst part, too, Ron, also, if you know, Robert notes, because you're going to need to debate these guys. And then at the advent of what was, of course, the Creature from Jekyll Island, and everything there forward has been just, they're just adding the, you know, extra knots to the noose. In other words, you know, they're just building blocks on, and then we have the NDAA and the other, you know, and it just, it goes on and on and on. And it's the same as the Agenda 21 push from 1992. They are patient. They will just do it one increment at a time. They will turn up the heat just enough so the frog thinks it's just, you know, sleeping.
Well,
I mean, that's what they've been doing.
Look, it's like dealing with children, okay?
Right.
It's absolutely like dealing with children. It's what they can get away with, what we allow, what we accept, okay? And I'm going to tell you that if you will go to the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, tear all the pages out that precede it, that go before it, just burn those because none of that exists. So you're going to go from the 14th Amendment forward. That's your Constitution. And I encourage everyone to go read what the Supreme Court ruled regarding the 14th Amendment, where it's very clear. It says all persons, remember that,
right,
born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Now, we'll just stop right there. The United States, not the United States of America, the United States. The United States is a federal corporation. It is Congress in assembly. Okay, that's what the Supreme Court ruled. That phrase, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, does not mean subject to the concurrent jurisdiction of Congress. Concurrent meaning that you're subject to the jurisdiction of Congress and to your state government, state and local officials, and so on and so forth. No. They said that means the exclusive jurisdiction of Congress. Well, there's only one way that happens, boys and girls, and that is if the states are no longer the organic constitutional several states, and we have evidence that they're not. Because it was the several states that created the United States
of America,
the federal government.
Right.
However, we had a secession movement in the 1860s, and subsequently those states that seceded, remember, they pulled their representatives and the states pulled their senators from the government. So there was no representation of those states in the government. That is secession, plain and simple.
Yes.
Those states were defeated by military conquest in 1865. And by 1867, the majority of those states had signed an agreement, and they were granted statehood under the new union in what was called Reconstruction. They were reconstructing the appearance of the United States of America.
Yeah.
And in order to gain entrance into the new union, in order to be considered a, quote, state, you had to vote in favor of ratifying the 14th Amendment. Now, only states could vote to ratify an amendment to the Constitution. If you were a military district, like Georgia, you were no longer a state. How could you then vote to ratify an amendment to the original Constitution? You couldn't.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So that little, that was capitulation. And moving forward, you have a different union.
Yes.
And it is a national, it is a national government. It is not a federal government.
It's a very, very bad system.
Ron, can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
What does it mean to you when you don't, when you don't hear anybody die in Venice that I haven't heard, unless it's from my past Venice City Councilman Dick Tracy? Besides that, there's no other flags of Venice that are half-mast. Just the only one that's half-mast is at Venice Hospital, in front of Venice, my dad's hospital. How do you take that?
Well, I mean, you know, these people don't give a shit about anybody but themselves. That's it.
So would you, would you consider that that's death to me, that I'm not going to make it?
No.
Nah. Nah, I don't.
You're too paranoid, Robert.
Would...
Don't be too paranoid.
I think that
just...
comes from being Jewish.
Thank you, Ron. And Spanish, too. I don't know what to think anymore of this country, you know. I had to hear...
Lock and load.
But I had to hear, I want to tell you guys something. I used this on my... I said to my opponents that they needed skin electric shock therapy to curtail their behaviors.
I think they just need a lobotomy, you know.
Well,
just lobotomize them.
Yeah.
You know,
I know
Pelosi
saw a bad one.
I'm telling you right now, I did see the other day that we have reached a national consensus, by the way. 90% of respondents polled are terrified and say we must do something about ISIS.
Oh, God.
ISIS is right here in the middle of my district.
The infomercial is working wonders, guys.
Yes. Yeah, the propaganda machine. Goebbels would be so proud. I
and
mean,
just
really.
remember what Obama said, okay?
Yes.
Remember what Obama said in his speech, that the United States will destroy any group that threatens the U.S. government anywhere in the world.
Oh, of course. That's you and me.
Of course.
Well, you know,
including
now
here at home, boys and girls.
Of course. Me too.
We're right back to the old 10% of the Revolutionary War, right?
Do you remember? Yeah, well, I hear what you're saying. Do you remember Obama's red line speech? And do you remember somebody telling you that, you know, call me crazy, get my tinfoil hat out, but I believe that that was a signal, a code, that we're going to start something. And, you know, you go back and do the research. Maybe I'm reading more into it than I should. But as my memory serves me, it wasn't long after that that we began hearing about ISIS.
Yep, and you know what? I mean, of course I see these idiots, the libtard blogs, you know, and they're still drooling over this clown. But, you know, when he does these speeches and reads that teleprompter, he couldn't write one of those speeches to save his soul. This man is being used. He's a prop. He's exactly that little, you know, that screen in Wizard of Oz and the little thing pulling the little levers in the back. That's who he is. Because, you know, there's the powers that be, and, of course, Valerie Jarrett and a few others, and all the big money, too, you know. And
he's reading the teleprompter, and I can't wait till they put LOL on it.
I don't need a teleprompter, Ron.
Hey, if you guys have not seen the video It's kind of a trippy video, but it is I, pet, goat, Roman
yes.
numerals 2. Just go to YouTube and put in I, pet, goat 2. Pretty interesting.
What is the
I,
pet? Is that P-E-T?
Yes.
Like pets, P-E, Paul, E-T. Goat. Okay,
pet.
I'm going to let you wrap
I-P-E-T.
It up. Robert, great hearing from you. Hope you win your deal.
I hope
God
I do
bless.
Too, Linda. And if I do, I'm coming to Indiana and visiting. I want to take care of Bill Strong.
Awesome. All right, guys. Take care and God bless. Good night.
Thanks, Miss Linda. Any parting thoughts, Mr. Robert?
No, just keep fighting. That's all we can do. I mean, as long as we can breathe and fight, that's all we can do.
Well, you know,
I don't know what,
as long as that Ebola isn't airborne, you know, then we're in trouble.
I already had the measles and the mumps, so I can't get it again, and the chicken pox. So
there you go.
The only thing I can get is prostate cancer, and that's the bottom line. That's all that's left with me because I've had everything else.
Robert, good luck in your race down there, and
I
appreciate
sir.
You calling in. And
okay,
God bless.
I appreciate
and, thank you for calling in, and I'm going to play us a song to take us out. Have a good night, sir. Everybody, I want you to remember to tune in tomorrow night right here at 7 p.m., Patriot Families, for the Hoot and Holler Show, and again Wednesday night for Miss Linda Sills right from the left coast. And just keep your head up, guys. Keep your eyes out.
Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago of a kingdom on a mountain and a valley.
Our brothers we will share.